There's music from Bart Miller, Take My Hand, Precious Lord. And we heard from Amy Grant, Sing Your Praise to the Lord. We heard from Buddy Green and God's Own Lamb. About 11 and a half minutes now after the hour, Broken Road Radio. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. This must be Thursday because Gisle's here. Gisle Sorley, good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm back from the beach.
Back from May. Yeah, you had a long bicycle ride, didn't you?
Yeah, biked all the way there, 130 miles.
Did you limp back or did you bike back?
I drove back.
Oh, you drove back. Okay. Surrender, eh?
But good trip.
And we also welcome special guest this morning, Phil Burgess. Phil, an author, an international speaker. He's with something that I'm eager to learn about called the Annapolis Institute and see what Phil does. But most importantly, has some really interesting thoughts for us on retirement and that whole phase of life. And lots of us born in the 40s and 50s listening today are thinking, well, it's about time that I retired. And we've been kind of cultured to think that somehow there's this magic thing about age 65 or maybe it's 66 now, or maybe it's 68, or maybe it's 70. I'm not sure what the proper age is, if there is even a proper age. Phil, welcome to the program this morning.
It's very good to be with you.
Just kind of a prelude to our story about retirement here. What is the Annapolis Institute?
Well, the Annapolis Institute is a think tank that deals primarily with principled leadership and how we, as leaders, whether it's of a nonprofit organization or of a government, make decisions that are principle driven. And I think that's one of the major issues facing our nation today and our society. And so what we try to do is work with companies, with nonprofits, and with governments to help their decision-making units and their leaders understand the principles that are involved in leadership and to practice those principles in their day-to-day activities.
You know, I've never talked to anybody who was part of a think tank before. I always had this mental, my cartoon bubble shows a bunch of people around a conference table in a huge stainless steel enclosure. Kicking around ideas. I guess they do more than that.
Yeah, what's missing is the Diet Coke. Diet Coke and some charts on the wall. At least in the old days. Today, it'd be have an iPad in front of you. But yeah. No, a think tank is a place where people come together to really think about problems that are affecting a big institution or a small neighborhood or whatever it may be. Some of the most important social innovations in our society have come out of the thinking of grassroots people. One of those deals with what we're talking about today, aging. There's a whole movement called Aging in Place, or the Village Movement, or continuing care communities, which are not really organized by big corporations, but they're organized by volunteers at the grassroots who make things work for people so they can remain in their homes and live out their lives there.
Now, when you say grassroots, does that also kind of include our concept these days of mass media or social media? Is all this information regarding retirement and old age being passed along in that fashion? Or are these organizations like yours meeting face-to-face and talking about these things?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good question. The fact is that the older Americans are really tuned into the Internet. Young people and old people are the ones who seem to really be using the internet to their advantage in their day-to-day lives. Many of the aging in place movements around the country, the village movement, some people call it, these are virtual retirement communities where people remain in their homes, but they take advantage of all the services that are available in a community. They may use the community college for education services. They may use the local YMCA for fitness services. They use the social services maybe from the government or from Catholic charities or from other nonprofits for other services they need during the week, Meals on Wheels, things like that. And the way that whole network is held together is usually by the internet. It's usually by a hub someplace. Usually it's not even an office. It's usually just somebody's home who takes the entrepreneurial leadership to knit everybody together and to keep information flowing about what's available where and under what circumstances.
You know, that really helps us transcend maybe financial or physical disabilities, weaknesses. It might be allow people to live anywhere they need to live and still be a part of that community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, if you go to an assisted living place, you're going to be talking about $3,000 to $5,000 a month. And although all the attention in the media is on those kinds of places, most people can't afford that. They can't even think about that. Mm-hmm. But in and living alone is very difficult because there are things you need. I mean, one of the biggest reasons why people end up in a nursing home is because they fall. And research shows the main reason they fall is they're getting up on a ladder or a chair to change a light bulb. And people need help around the home as they get older and get more infirm. And so the aging in place movement provides volunteers usually who come around and they do everything from the biggest need is transportation, take you to the grocery, take you to get your meds, your prescriptions filled and things like that, but also fix-it services to fix the leaky faucet, to change the light bulbs, those kinds of things. And then number three is lawn maintenance and those kinds of things. Well, you do that, and this aging-in-place village, that this virtual village, they will do that for sometimes I would say 80% of them cost between $500 and $1,200 a year. Mm. A year, mm-hmm, for those services to be a member of one of those networks. They're really quite remarkable. I mean, mm-hmm, Alexis de Tocqueville would marvel at what we're doing today if he were around. It's just exactly what he saw back in the 1830s when he wrote Democracy in America.
Now, what brings this about? It seems like mass communication and social media and the internet facilitate it, but does that result mainly because of the sheer numbers of baby boomers retiring? What is it, something like 10,000 a day now retiring?
Yeah. The tsunami of baby boomers retiring is just enormous, and we haven't even begun to see the impact. If you go to a shopping center and be mindful of who's walking down the aisles, you'll begin to see that more and more people are really in their later years or in their post-60s, post-70 years. But this is just the beginning. The first baby boomers started turning 65 in 2011, and that's going to continue at the rate of 10,000 a day until 2029. And so you can see we're just at the beginning of this kind of age wave that's going to engulf the whole society. We need to be as inventive as Americans have ever been, as our culture has ever been, in figuring out a way for people to continue to live into their later years with integrity and with purpose and by being productive. And being productive, in my view, is the single key to successful aging.
Well, Gisele, I've got to address this to you because you're a younger guy. How are you going to pay for all this?
I know. I'm just thinking about my taxes. They're going to go through the roof. I'm moving back to Norway.
Yeah, right. Yeah, by the way, I was a Fulbright student in Norway for 2 years.
Oh, were you really?
I lived in Oslo.
And you decided not to stay, though, I see.
No, I didn't. I wrote a book about Norwegian foreign policy way back when.
Interesting. Well, we've got this tidal wave coming then, and I'm in that wave myself, and
this is the wave.
The beginning of the wave. Yeah, I've caught the wave here.
I started the avalanche.
Well, I'm ahead of the wave, and that makes me a scout, and I know from reading all the cowboy and Indian stories what happens to scouts. So
the things that I've been interested in seeing in the last four or five years is exactly what you're talking about. And it's not the people walking around in the shopping centers, but the people who are working behind the counters in the fast food restaurants.
Yeah.
As a friend of mine who owns a liquor store in this area, who told me years ago that he could never hire anybody under 35, not because he didn't like young people, but because they couldn't add.
Yeah, right.
And he said he loved to hire old people, 35 and up, because not only did they have good math skills and they like people, but they showed up for work on time.
Right. And McDonald's has actually done a lot of research on this with their employees over the years. And one of the things they have found is they hire older people not even primarily because they have a good work ethic, but primarily to be role models to the younger people who are also working there. Many of those younger people come from single parent families. Many of those younger people don't have fathers or grandfathers in their life. And McDonald's is a place where not only do these later life Americans provide productive services, but they provide mentoring and nurturing services for the younger workers.
Well, you bring up a key word there, mentoring. It used to be, in years past, in this country, there were two, three, maybe even four generations living in a household, and the mentors were built into the system. Where do we get mentors now? Does that offer some potential for people like us who are in that wave?
Yeah, I think it does. I think one of the things that bothers me is we get too many people thinking, you know, in silos and programmatically and programs and to do this and do that. The main thing, the main key, research is overwhelmingly, there's an overwhelming consensus on this, the main key to successful aging is social engagement. That's point number one. Number two, the best way to remain socially engaged is to work. And if you're out there working, if you're out there doing something, it may be part-time, it may be full-time, it may be for pay, it may be volunteer work, it may be enrichment work where you're simply trying to become a better photographer, but you're doing it in a disciplined way. But if you're out there engaged, then you can be a mentor. Then you can be a model to somebody else's life. You know, Rodney Stark says in The Rise of Christianity that Christianity spread so rapidly during its first 100 years, not because of doctrine, but because the non-Christians saw how the Christians behaved, especially during the plagues that hit in the first century in 42 AD and 67 and 91 AD. And they said they saw the Christians stayed in town. They didn't move to the country, which is what everybody else did during a plague, everybody who could. They stayed in town and ministered to the sick. Many of them died in the process. And people started to say, I want to be like them. And that's why it's important for boomers to get out, not to think about retirement at all. That word ought to be stricken from the language. But not to think about, you know, golden years of endless leisure and amusement. But we ought to think about, you know, having unscheduled time for the first time in our life to go out and do things that are helping to make the world a better place or to love our neighbor.
Where did this notion come from that somehow 65, you kick back and take it easy?
And that's an interesting question. I think the answer is it was a commercial idea that came from the Sun City folks back in the 1960s. The first Sun City, a homogeneous, an age homogeneous retirement community outside of Phoenix, started doing national ads, and they talked about, you know, people entering their golden years, and they ought to go to some age homogeneous community where they can play golf, and they can have tennis, and they can go fishing, and they can go whitewater canoeing, and they can play bingo in the evening, and they can play canasta during the morning, and you know that was supposed to be the ideal life, and you know that took on that took root in our culture, and even though you know, I know, everybody knows, very, very few people do that, and the few that do, most of them go crazy after a year,
and
they want to do
die.
Something more
and,
meaningful.
And die younger, I think,
yeah.
Too.
And you remember that old song, I forget who sang, but is that all there is? I mean, that's what all these so-called retirees who go to these happy-yappy places end up saying. They sit on that bench and they say, is that all there is?
Mm-hmm. Is it also possible that that government had a great deal to do with it, or at least an element to do with it, with the introduction of the Social Security Act in the 1934, and the idea that there was, I mean, and it still is not enough to live on. It never was, and it never will be. Yeah. But just the notion that you get to a certain point and your useful years are done, so here's a little something to so you can kick back and you won't starve right away.
Yeah, every time there's a new development in society, government jumps in with a program. You know, you want to say, don't just do something, stand there. Mm. But you know, it never does. Now, here's the dirty little secret about retirement, and that is the first retirement age was set at 65 for the first time in 1888 by Bismarck. Bismarck, who we know as a great general, was also a great prime minister. And of Prussia, and he set the retirement age. He had the world's first Social Security program, and he set the retirement age at 65. Well, he was also a great politician because when he set the retirement age at 65, the life expectancy was 41 in Prussia. So there was a promise you'd never have to keep. You know, it's a little like some of the things going on today. If you think about, give you another little factoid. In 1900, the life expectancy in the United States was 47 years old. And in 1935, when they passed Social Security, making retirement 65 again, modeling after Bismarck, the average life expectancy in the U.S. was 62. Well, I mean, Roosevelt was one of our most brilliant politicians. He, once again, he made a, you know, he gave a, it, it was a, he took the, he took the arms out of a vest. I mean, he, you know, it just didn't, you know, it was a promise that wasn't going to have to be kept. But then, in the 20th century, something unprecedented happened, and that is life expectancy nearly doubled from 47 years in 1900 to 78 years in 2000. Longevity is the reason why we have a financial problem, and it's the reason why we have, I would argue, a spiritual problem with what do we do with those bonus years after 65.
Gisela, you deal a lot in finance and counseling and advising people. Do you find that people are prepared financially for retirement? I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Well, I kind of work with the spectrum that folks that have access and have plenty of work, but still there's also this longing to be meaningful and to be productive. So I think Phil is right on. The key is really figuring out what did God create you to do. You know, everybody is created to do something unique and contribute to this world in some way, and show really a piece of who God is by doing something. So I think all of us should try and figure out and wrestle, okay, what is that for me? Why did God create me? And find a way to do that. And the financial piece usually comes after that if you seek that.
And Phil, later life seems to be a time when you have a really fresh perspective, because you've been around long enough, you can look back and understand what younger people are doing and thinking and feeling and figure out ways to help and to contribute. It seems like, and you mentioned freeing up. I mean, the kids are you're empty nesters. Kids are grown and gone and doing their own thing. This is a great time of opportunity.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm in the vanguard of the baby boomers. I'm 74. I'll tell you, one of the things that I personally feel, that I've personally experienced over the last 10 or 12 years of my life is I do feel like I have something to give to my kids and give to their friends and to give back. In fact, I'm mentoring lots of kids right now. Not kids, but they're really young men and women who've just got their law degree or just going into professional school, an MBA program, or something like that, and there's a lot of truth to it. I mean, you have to live through things to really appreciate what to do. But let me go back to Gisela's point, if I could. I think the single most important thing here is that when we start talking about later life, the first thing we do is we start talking about money. And we start talking about retirement funds, and we don't talk about money. We talk about where you're going to live in the Sun Belt or in Florida or Arizona or someplace. But the most important thing is who are you going to be, not what are you going to do, not what are you going to have, but who are you going to be. And I think that, you know, in fact, we were born children of God, and we should be children of God all the way through our life. And that means that our purpose-driven life is to glorify God in all that we do. And the way we do that is by helping others and by repairing the world. And so the most important insight I think Christians can have today to the issue of what to do in retirement really comes from Martin Luther. And this would be good for whether you're a Catholic or a Protestant. But way back in the beginning of Christendom, there was a Catholic historian named Eusebius. And Eusebius set up an idea that you'd have, you know, holy callings and vocational callings. And there were kind of two tiers, the people who had holy callings and the people who, you know, laid bricks and did plumbing. But in 1521, 4 years after the Reformation, Martin Luther took him on and said, no, all work is holy work. And when we talk about the Protestant work ethic, that's where the Protestant work ethic came from. Because people, all of a sudden, a bricklayer wakes up one day, and he's not just laying bricks, he's building a cathedral. All of a sudden, a person's doing holy work. And if you're going to be, and if you're doing holy work, if the work you're, you know, Martin Luther King, another Martin Luther, said, if you're a street sweeper, sweep the streets like Michelangelo painted. We're always called to use our gifts to glorify God in whatever realm we're in, and to do it to our fullest, and to do it for as long as we can. You know, in number, there's no place in the Bible where the word retirement is used except once, in Numbers 8. And in Numbers 8, it tells the Levites to retire when they're 50, and then to volunteer. It doesn't use the word volunteer, but then to devote your life to helping the priests to set up and take down the tents as they pass the word through the tribes. Mm-hmm. So even in Scripture, we're called to work to the end, to use our gifts to the end.
Tell us about your book. You wrote a book about this. And what was your motivation, and who's the audience?
Well, the audience for the book is boomers. Although I'm a Christian, I tried to write the book in a it's got a believer perspective, but I try to encompass all the different religious perspectives as well as New Age perspectives. One of the interesting things is if you're a Christian, it's easy to talk about what you should do in your later life because, as Gisela said a while ago, we have one purpose, and that's to glorify God. But if you're not a Christian, what do you do? Well, it's interesting. If you go through and look at the other world religions, or even at most New Age, not all, but most New Age points of view, it comes back to do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Those are widely shared. Love your neighbor, that's widely shared through all the religions. And to repair the world, widely shared through all religions. So I think that what I've tried to do is to write a book around that's what we're called to do throughout our life. We have three major gifts: time, treasure, talent. And we should use those gifts to their fullest, to the very end. And of those gifts, time is the most dear in a way. Because, you know, if you lose your treasure, you can replace it. If you lose a talent because you're a piano player and you lose an arm or something like that, you can pick up other talents. But time, once it's gone, is gone forever. You know, we wake up every day with 84,600 seconds in our time bank account. And at the end of that day, those disappear. They will never be available again. You can't save them. You can't bank them. They're there for that day and that day only. So you have to use those 84,600 seconds in the most important ways in your life. And what we seem to do sometimes is to take time for granted. And we look for past times. We look for times that we can just relax and chill out. Well, you know, it may be okay to relax and chill out. Scripture says do it once a week. The rest of the time, work. If you go to Genesis, what is the picture of God that comes from Genesis? He's a worker. He creates. Every day he creates something. And then what's he do? He evaluates it. He sits back and says, that was good. The only time he said that it wasn't good is when he created man, and he said he needs a companion. And that may have been the only mistake he ever made.
It was God's but, first. Uh-oh.
But you know, the point is that's what God does. God creates, and then on the seventh day He rests. And it seems to me that if we take Scripture seriously, that's what we should do. That's how we should model our lives. We don't waste time. We rest to look at what we've done, and we rest to prepare to have another week of creative activity.
And I would suggest you're not calling people to just busyness, but to an intentional creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, one of the most depressing things is when you talk to people, and I've now interviewed more than 500 people in their later life, lives. And one of, to me, one of the most depressing things is when people say, oh, I'm busier than ever. And then you say, are you happy? You say, oh, yeah, I'm really happy. And then you say, are you really happy? Well, not really. You know, there must be more to it than this. And I think that, you know, the thing we have to do is to find a way to always be searching for ways throughout our life to use our gifts of time, treasure, and talent to glorify God in every way that we can. And as time goes on, to, you know, as we have more free time in those 84,600 seconds a day, because we don't have to go to a quote regular job, we can develop new talents. We can refine the talents that we have. We can become more effective in what we do. You know, our calling, as many writers, Oz Guinness and others have said, a calling is that which is satisfying and productive. There are a lot of things that are satisfying, like playing golf, but they aren't productive. There are lots of things that are productive, like maybe cleaning a toilet, but they aren't satisfying to most people. What we have to do is to find things that are satisfying and productive. And to many people, cleaning the toilet is satisfying because it's helping others, because it's helping make a place a cleaner place. You know, and I think that we just have to have a whole new perspective on what work is if we're going to have an experience, if we're going to experience successful aging, because work, to me, is the key to successful aging.
Well, we bear the image of God, and God as a creator has given us that, and there's no reason to give it up at the age of 65 or 70 or any other time. Is keep on keeping on. How can people get a hold of your book?
It's available at Amazon.com in paperback or hardback. And it's also available as an ebook on Amazon.com, as a Kindle, and so it's easy to get, and lots of people have been getting it.
Well, of course, we'll have a link to it in the podcast, which will go up on our website under audio archives. You'll be able to replay this whole conversation at your leisure, and also link and find the book at Amazon.com. And also, we'll also give you a link. Is there a place that people can email you or contact you?
The website for the book is www.booternation.com, booternation.com.
Okay, that'll do it. It'd be a good contact point.
And also, I write a weekly column for the Annapolis Capital, the local paper here in Annapolis, and it's called Bonus Years. And every week, every Sunday in the lifestyle section, there's a column called Bonus Years where I write about most of the time about individuals who are doing interesting and productive things in their later life. Maybe once a month I'll write about an institution like, you know, what an aging in place group is doing, or what the community college is doing for at their center on aging to, you know, help and be of assistance to people in later life.
I got a quick question and just happen to think about it. How long ahead of time do you find yourself planning to do something, as opposed to just start doing something that happened to inspire you 5-10 minutes ago?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, if you don't have a plan to do something, then you're going to do whatever, you know, comes up. And so I think, you know, a plan is a good thing to have. In my book, I talk about taking a time out. A time out may be a week, it may be a month, it may be, you know, may go off for 6 months and whatever. People have different ways of doing it. But I think it's important in any life transition, not just, you know, quote retirement, but let's stick with retirement for now. But in any life transition, to take some time and think about what is it about your old life that you want to keep, and what is it about your old life that you need to discard and get rid of? That was then. And then what is it about that's going to be the centerpiece of your new life? And is that new life for as far as you can see? Is that new life for 2 years? You know, what is it? I mean, many people will say, for example, I want to in my first few years of retirement, they say, I want to take 1 year and just kind of think through, you know, where I've been and where I'm going. That's good. I mean, I don't know it has to take that long, but that's fine if that's what somebody wants to do. And then people may say, I also want to take a year and see parts of the world that I've never seen before. Well, that's okay, too. That's an enriching experience. But then when I get back from that, I'm going to do this or that or something else. And I think it's important always to have in mind how you're going to use the gifts that you have developed over the years, the God-given gifts that you have, and how you're going to use these enrichment experiences that you've invested in, how you're going to use those to help others and make the world a better place.
Is that Darth Vader behind you?
It is. Yeah. My wife was a college and career counselor at the local children's school. Oh my goodness!
Oh, look at
but
that.
But mine is signed by James Earl Jones.
Really? Oh, now he's going to be envious. I'll never hear the end.
Yeah.
Gisele Sorley, you're a treasure hunter. You succeeded once again in finding someone who can contribute so much to our understanding and to the programming here at Broken Road Radio. How do you do that? You're just well connected, boy.
I don't know. I just bump into people.
Well, we've been talking with Phil Burgess, author and member at the Annapolis Institute. Oh, just one thought about that. How does the Annapolis Institute function? Do you contract with organizations or with governments, or is it a nonprofit corporation? How's that set up?
Yeah, we don't do it with government so much. We do it with individuals who are in government who want mentoring services. But what we do primarily now is we're focused primarily on later life Americans and on institutions that are trying to serve later life Americans. You know, one of the things I talk about in my book that I think is really important here, and that is, if you think about your life, your life is scripted from the beginning till the day you retire. You know, it's scripted by your parents, then it's scripted by your school teachers, and then as you get into your early teens, it's scripted by your peers and your parents, and all the others, you know, are in there scripting away at your life too. And if you're fortunate enough, it's scripted by your Lord, because your parents have exposed you to God's Word. And as you go along, then you're scripted by your job, by your college professor, then by your first employment, and then you're scripted by the requirements of parenthood and by the requirements of marriage. And then all of a sudden, you reach 65, and most of the scripts are gone. The kids are moved out, the job is there, and you're kind of free-floating, and you're living in an unscripted life. And that can be a very unsettling thing for people, and it is, I can guarantee, just from the people, hundreds of people I've talked to wake up someday and not have to do anything is really a problem. And by the way, wives almost always have a script, because most women today, even in these days, you know, they are the link to the kids. Oftentimes, they're the people who manage the household and so on. And, you know, they've pretty much got a script. That's why women do better in retirement than men. And also, women have always had support systems. They have support systems if they work. They have support systems even if they don't work outside the home. But men, their support system is primarily at work. And when work goes, everything goes. So one of the main issues that we have to face, one of the main challenges we have to face, is what will be our script as we move into our post-career years?
Well, and learning who you are, because so for so many men, who you are is what you do.
That's right. And yet, you know, I think the way we, you know, the many people, and I talk about this in the book, talk about be, do, have, the Henry Nouwen, the Catholic philosopher talks about be, do, have, and the secular psychologists talk about be, do, have. But you talk, you know, when a toddler starts role playing, they want to be a princess, they want to be a cowboy. And then if they really like being that, the next thing, they want to do what a princess does and what a cowboy does. So they start, you know, going bam, bam, or they wear a tiara and they dance around. And then if they really like the doing, then they want to have. They want to have a tiara. They want to have guns and holster and so on. But, you know, that's a very healthy way to progress through, you know, your life. But by the time that kid is 18 years old, the parents have socialized him to only think about having and doing. They don't say, what are you going to be when you grow up? They say, if you don't go to college, do. And if you don't get a degree, have. You're not going to be able to have a good wife, have. And buy a nice house in the suburbs, have. So everything is do, have, do, have, do, have by the time a child is 18 years old. And, you know, he's lost track of what it is he wants to be. And sometimes it takes 40 or 50 years to get that back.
Well, I'm wondering, and I'm listening to you, Phil. I'm wondering if this applies to 98.7% of the population, because none of this applies to me. I've always had an unscripted life. I mean, I have no idea how, and it's only in reflection now. My folks never told me what I should do or what I should be or what I should have. They just said, we want you to be happy. Whatever that happens to mean for you. And as a result, you know, only recently have I had a semblance of a scripted life because my wife wants me to vacuum the rug this morning. but that's about the extent of it. I have no idea what I'll be doing next year or even next week. I'm on the verge of starting a new business. I'm going to talk to somebody tomorrow about it. And I've been taking on this radio thing. I ran for political office 4 or 5 years
ago.
Well,
he ran from office 3 times.
Successful. Yes, I was successful at it. And I mean, I wonder how many people don't have scripts and are very happy with not having scripts. I'm kind of thinking that you're one of those guys.
Yeah, I am. You know, I am. I was just talking to some people last night about, they say, what was the most important advice you gave to your kids? And I said, well, my kids tell me the most important advice I ever gave to them was always raise your hand. And you know, that's the way I've lived my life, too. I've always raised my hand when somebody wants something to do. Raise your hand. Does anybody know anything about simulation research? Somebody asked at a seminar I was in when I was 26 years old in Oslo, Norway. And I raised my hand. I said, I do. And I didn't know anything about it. And 6 months later, I learned all I could. I wrote a paper, and that led to my first job at Ohio State University. So, you know, I'm a big believer in spontaneity, and I'm a big believer in raising your hand every time there's a chance to do something new, experience something new. But I think that once you get into whatever it is you get into, there is a script there. You had to be there a certain time today. There are certain things you can talk about and not talk about. You know, there are scripts involved in every role we play in society. That's what a role is. A role is something that has constraints around it. And I think that, you know, what happens when the retirement comes, especially for men, is all of a sudden they wake up and they are unscripted for, you know, about anything except for maybe their role as a husband and their role as a father or grandfather. And I think one reason why so many men really take to the grandfathering bit as much or more than women do, and I've done some work on this, is because all of a sudden they have a role again. I mean, kids like them. The little kids like them. They can, you know, show them how to bat a baseball and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think whether we live a rigidly scripted life or whether we live a loosely scripted life, it's very important for us to have the definition of what is satisfying and what is productive and to follow that calling in all that we do.
Well, Phil, yeah, awfully good.
We all kind of have a script based on our relationship with God, and I think that's what's missing in a lot of people's lives is that there has been no relationship. They don't ask every morning, okay, oh God, what do you want me to do with my time, talents, and treasure today? And if you don't have that relationship and you suddenly stop working, then you're in trouble. But if you always have that relationship and always are in a communion with God, then there is fulfillment and meaning because he's going to tell you what to do and what he wants you to do. So I think that's key to develop early.
Yeah, that's a bingo. I mean, you know, if for people who are believers, they have a script, and then the key is to listen. The key is to listen. It's to find ways to, you know, through prayer, through a silent retreat, through, you know, periodic timeouts in your life, whatever it is, to listen to what is it that God is calling you to do, how he's calling you to use your gifts to love others or repair the world. One other thing, if I could, when we were in Australia for 3.5 years, came back in late 2008, and we had several of our relatives were in assisted living, and several were in really bad shape and with Alzheimer's and so on. And I remember we traveled around to see everybody the first 6 months we got back, and we had been to several assisted living places, and people were lying with their heads down on the table and just, you know, really, I mean, they were in nice places and being well taken care of, but just, you know, what appears to be a miserable, you know, existence. And I remember walking out one day, and I said to my wife, I said, I can't see what's the purpose of life when we walk in here and we see 10 people just, you know, lying on a table or lying asleep in a chair or whatever. And my wife said something that was so profound, and I've never forgotten it. And this was 3 or 4 years ago. She said, yeah, I've had the same feelings. She said, but I've concluded just in the past few visits. She said, I think our purpose at that point in our life is to be the vessel for other people's love. And I think that's really true. And when people, you know, start talking about, you know, some of the, you know, things we don't like to talk about, like they talk about euthanasia and death panels and all these kinds of things, we have to remember that God always has a purpose for us. And even when we're infirm, and even when we no longer can even know who we are, we can still be a vessel for other people's love. And that's a blessing for everybody involved.
Oh, it's a great thought, and there's deep wisdom in that. Also, deep wisdom and some very good advice in Phil's book. It's called Reboot. We're talking with author Phil Burgess. And Gisela, say thanks so much for bringing Phil to our attention. And Phil, hopefully we can maintain contact, maybe talk to you now and then, and draw on your wisdom occasionally.
That'd be good. We have a workbook coming out called The Length of Our Days, and it's an explicitly Christian 10-week workbook where people can work through these issues from an explicitly Christian perspective.
You know, as a Christian, I kind of like the thought that retirement it really is the beginning of the beginning.
It is.
And it's a whole new and just a cherished phase of life. Phil, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, Jim. Thank you.
Music continues now from Steve Bell. Gisela, take care. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys.
May the Lord bless and keep you.